I had a realization that happiness doesn't mean perfect. And yet for my entire life, I had equaled that. If I was perfect, then that would mean I would be safe and I'd be happy and I'd be successful.
Welcome to The Power Hour, the weekly podcast that will motivate you to pursue your passion and to achieve success. I'm Adrienne Herbert, international speaker, fitness coach, Adidas global ambassador and entrepreneur. Each week, I'll be talking to today's leading coaches, creatives, change makers, and innovators to find out their daily habits, morning routines, and rules to live by. The Power Hour is all about taking just 1 hour each day to help you improve your life and unlock your full potential. Whether you want to build a business, write a book, run a marathon, or maybe you're just looking for a spark of inspiration, the Power Hour is going to help you get there faster. Welcome back to the Power Hour podcast. Today's guest is a former TV presenter turned wellness entrepreneur. She is the creator of the mindfulness app Happy Not Perfect, described by Vogue as the mindfulness app that actually works. She is also the host of the Happy Not Perfect podcast. And by combining years of research with real life experience, her mission is to help everyone manage their mental well-being. I think now more than ever, it is important for us to all prioritize both our physical and our mental health. So I'm really glad to be joined today virtually by Poppy Jamie.
Oh, thank you so much. What a lovely introduction. Hi.
Oh, thank you. And thanks for giving us your time to connect today virtually online. I know this is now the new world of podcasting, so I'm sure everyone, yourself, the listeners, I'm sure we're all just getting used to this new recording life.
Right. I know. It's strange, but then also it's nice to think that we can still connect even if it's not in person.
Yeah, isn't it great how quickly people adapt and evolve and change? And kind of a few weeks ago, I think everyone was kind of going, oh my gosh, you know, how do we do this? How do we do that? And now it's kind of, yeah, I guess it's already become our new normal.
Totally. And I think the word which I think is one of the most important right now is that word adapt. Because I don't think necessarily we are accepting or it's getting any easier. But as long as we are focusing on adapting, I think that's been really helpful to me anyway, which is just to wake up every day and think, okay, how am I going to adapt a little bit more to make this experience better?
Absolutely. I couldn't have said it better myself. And actually, I was thinking, when I was thinking about the script and for this episode, I was really looking forward to recording with you today because I really do think that it's such a relevant conversation to be having right now, specifically with everything. This situation is, you know, everyone's dealing with it in a different way, but I would say that globally, we are all in some way, I suppose, suffering some level of anxiety just with the uncertainty of life, uncertainty of the world, uncertainty of the situation, of work, of, you know, health, economics. I think everything is, yeah, it's just been shifted so quickly. So I think I'd love to start really by talking to you about the app, about your app Happy Not Perfect, you know, from when you created it to what it's become now, and what does the app offer?
So Happy Not Perfect has been in my life for the past 5 years. And when I first started thinking about the idea, it really came from a personal need and also what I was beginning to realize a need from the viewers. I was a TV host and I launched the first TV show on Snapchat. So I had millions of people watch this show and I would receive thousands of messages of people being really honest about how they feel, because at the time, social media was relatively new and Snapchat was a really interesting platform because Instagram was this stream of projection. It was everything we wanted people to know about our lives or wanted to think about us. And Snapchat, because the message deleted, it was a platform where people could potentially be more honest because their message would delete. And so I started to receive these messages saying, I'm feeling really anxious, I'm feeling really stressed. And I was feeling the exact same thing. And eventually, I actually completely burnt out and got diagnosed with adrenal burnout, which is just essentially chronic stress. It's sustained stress for a long period of time. And in that moment, I started actually beginning to listen to my mother, who's a psychotherapist. And it was one of those things that she'd always said for our entire life, you know, look after your mind, look after your mind, you know, don't forget your mind. And, you know, it was one of those things where you roll your eyes and you're like, yeah, 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 right. I've got to do this. Like achieve, do more productivity. And actually, I learned the hard way that if you, what you don't emotionalize, you physicalize. My body gave up first. And that was when I realized that Happy Not Perfect needed to be a tool to help us look after our mental well-being. And at the time, the only things on offer to anyone that was feeling stressed or anxious or just going through life was meditation. And for me, I just couldn't get on board with it. I was like, I'm too busy in the morning. I don't have time. And, you know, if I did try meditation, I found it really hard to stick to. And trying to find an alternative to meditation was really what is the foundations of Happy Not Perfect. It gives you a daily ritual that combines the last 40 years of positive neuroscience into 7 easy steps. So just like you go to the gym for your body, this is a gym for your mind. And it turns positive psychology into a daily game. And it was really the thing and that education that helped me recover from my habit and of overworking and having poorer mental health because of it.
Wow, that's brilliant to hear that, Poppy. I mean, not brilliant to hear that you had to learn it the hard way, but I think, to be honest, I think it's that real combination, as I discussed, between, you know, having your experience with science, because I think the two are so relevant. You know, we need both. I think we need to have the science, we need to have the data, we need to, you know that what people, we're asking people to do or telling people to do, has, you know, evidence-based research and all the rest of it. But actually, we're human beings. And I think that actually our own experiences and hearing the experiences and the stories and the lessons of others personally is where I feel like I get the most value. And actually, whilst you were talking, I was thinking about, there's a talk that I deliver sometimes. And one section I talk about is optimizing energy. And, you know, how can we optimize our energy? And as you said, it's not just about productivity, do more. But actually, you know, when you look at the signs that kind of lead to people's burnout, especially in city life and in the corporate world, there's these almost like this checklist of things, which actually, when I rattle them off and I say to people about, you know, if you wake up feeling tired, if you regularly take painkillers because you have headaches, if you drink 3 or 4 coffees a day and you would say that you're addicted to caffeine, if you have bloating and digestive issues, if you feel, you know, overworked, stressed, all these things. And people look at that checklist and they kind of go, yeah, it just comes with the job. Like, that's just normal. That is life. That's how we all exist in the city. That's just expected. And I think that actually when that becomes normal, when those things become part of your everyday, as I said, addicted to coffee, waking up feeling tired, perhaps being bloated, having skin breakouts, and just thinking that that's okay, I think that is where the line has really blurred and people go, this is what, yeah, as I said, it's part of the job. You know, don't complain. Just look around. Everybody's in the same boat. We're all doing the same thing. And actually highlighting that, no way, this is not how we should be living. This is not optimum for our health. And actually, we can't maintain it. And eventually, unfortunately, those burnouts happen. But by then, you know, hopefully it's not too little too late. But do you know what I mean? This kind of cross accepted culture that that's just how we can all live.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that we are all on a hamster wheel and it's really hard to get off. And it's hard to get off because the fear of getting off is even worse. And so from my experience, you know, I was self-employed, so freelance, and you have this fear of, well, if you say no to something, maybe you won't get a call next week, or and you can't track your income. So it was... you know, I think the fear that keeps us in the hamster wheel is very real. And I think that even the time we're in right now, it's like the world got burnt out and it's forcing this change in rhythm. And look, I've been quite busy during this corona period, but I think I see anyway, there is a massive wake up, I think globally, of us all questioning whether this pace of life is worth it, is worth the bloating, is worth the health implications, because what are we killing ourselves for? Because, you know, in my experience, it wasn't because I had better relationships. I had worse relationships. I had no time for relationships. So when we really consider what happiness means, what we're striving for, arguably, when we work harder and harder and harder, is to think that maybe this is going to be a road to more happiness. And actually, I learned that it was really just a road to more physical pain and also emotional pain. And that's really where these words, happy, not perfect, I suppose, fall into place, because I had a realization that happiness doesn't mean perfect. And yet for my entire life, I had equaled that perfect. If I was perfect, then that would mean I would be safe and I'd be happy and I'd be successful. And obviously, I never reached perfection, very far from. And actually have to remind myself every single day that actually happiness couldn't be far from perfect.
Yeah. That's really interesting, actually, happiness and defining what happiness is and even what perfection is, because it's different for everybody, right? You know, how do you define success? How do you define happiness? And I think for me, I think I'm learning that that can change. You know, what you define as happiness for you in your 20s might be different in your 30s, might be different again in your 40s. And I think coming back to that thing of adapting, and we're all being forced, as you said, now to adapt. It's almost like the hamster wheel has stopped for a lot of people. And yeah, they've got this new time maybe on their hands, or, you know, if they're not so busy right now, if they're not working right now. And so I guess I wanted to go back a little bit to talking to you about the Happy Not Perfect app, and particularly for anyone who might be skeptical about, you know, mindfulness, meditation. Like, I definitely know that I have skeptics within my friendship circle. So yeah, what's a good place to start, and what would you say to anyone who's skeptical around, you know, downloading a mindfulness app?
Well, I think this is where the science is fascinating, and we can't deny the science. And actually, we can't deny our evolutionary history. So if you go back to looking at who we really are as human beings, we learned that we have essentially only two modes of being. We're either in our safe mode, which is in our rest and relax digest system, or we're in our fight and flight, ready to, I'm in danger mode. And the problem is that, you know, go back to the Sahara Desert, we would mostly be in the I am safe, the rest and relax mode. And then if we got threatened by a lion and a tiger, we would switch to the I'm in danger mode, and then we'd have the cascade of more, you know, we'd have the cortisol levels, we'd have the energy to be able to run away, we would be able to fight, we would have to flee. But the problem is with modern life is that, you know, we're not spending most of our time in that rest and relax system, and only occasionally getting into the fight and flight. We're spending 90% of our time in fight and flight, with the cortisol, with the inflammation, with our heart beating faster. And of course, then that lowers our immune system. And then we're spending a tiny bit of our time, if ever, in the rest and digest safe mode. And so what really mindfulness does, it helps you spend more of your time and trains your brain to be able to spend more of your time in that rest and relaxed system. Because when you're in that rest and relaxed system, the benefits are endless. Your immune system gets boosted, your inflammation goes down, you can sleep better, your prefrontal cortex, which is the part of your brain that makes good decisions rather than your emotional monkey brain, is in control. And I ask everyone, who would you rather make decisions for you, a crazy emotional monkey or a badass CEO? And more often than not, it's always the badass CEO, right? We'd want to be making our life decisions for us. But that badass CEO, or some people call it the wise old owl, that part of the brain goes completely offline when we are in that emergency, I'm in danger mode. And so what mindfulness is, it's training off the pitch. And Rick Hansen, this amazing author of Hardwiring Happiness, he told me that. And he said, you know, mindfulness is training. So when you get on the pitch, you're making the right passes. And that's so true, because mostly in our life, everything's happening so quickly. We don't have time to consciously make decisions. Our automatic mind makes them for us. So we need to do the mindfulness. So it means that we start to not be in the throes of life. And I use this metaphor of kind of, you know, our life is often like sitting at the end of a bell of a clock, and we're going and we're being swung from left to right in the throes of life. What mindfulness does, it helps you move up to the top of the bell. So those bells are still swinging, but you don't have to swing along with them. You can feel centered and grounded at the top and start making these tactical decisions that fundamentally get you better outcomes. So I see mindfulness hugely useful in terms of like navigating your life in a way that you want, rather than being the subject of your negative inner chatter. And we all have negative inner chatter because we have an 80% negative bias. And the 80% negative bias comes from, again, evolutionary reasons. The reason why we're obsessed with thinking negatively is because once upon a time, that helped us survive. We wouldn't be living the life we are now if we were not wired to look out for the dangers. So go back to caveman times. There was no use for us. There's no evolutionary use for us to remember the good moments, but there was an evolutionary survival use for us to remember where the tiger was, where the snake might bite us, where there were all these potential dangers. So, of course, we then go through our life trying, and our brain thinks it's doing a really good job by trying to identify everything that could possibly be negative. And as a consequence, we then get into worry loops. We can feel overly anxious, but of course, because our brain thinks it's doing a good job for us. So again, mindfulness, especially with the app Happy Not Perfect, the reason why we developed the happiness workout in the way we did is because it challenges this negative bias. It is actually able to train us away from being so negatively like caveman default mode focused, and actually tries to upgrade our biological hardware so we can start being hardwired for more happiness rather than just being in survival mode the whole time.
It's fascinating, absolutely fascinating. I love, you know, I read a lot about this kind of stuff because I'm really into it myself, but I really liked what you described about the bell analogy, and also the kind of thing about the gym. You know, we train our bodies, often people do have a physical practice which they stick to, and actually I think, yeah, having a gym for the mind is surely just as important. And I think, you know, as I was talking about skeptics, you know, I definitely, you know what, I think I sit somewhere in the middle. I'm not skeptical at all, but I think I don't prioritize it enough in the way that others do. I've got friends who, you know, they love anything meditation, mindfulness, journaling, gratitude diaries, you know, all moving slower, listening, silence. I've got friends that do 5-day silent retreats, and you know, they cannot get enough. And so from their perspective, they're like, Adrienne, you know, you've got to slow it down, you've got to, you know, you're doing so many things, you're always in doing mode, you're always in striving mode, go go go. And then I've also got, I guess, you know, as I said, I've got the skeptical friends who kind of prefer the more, I don't know, I think it's more of like a, let's do things that are actionable, this needs to be measurable, they need to see progress. And it's kind of that thing of, oh, it's a nice to have, but as you said before, I don't have time to, you know, lay on my back with my eyes closed for 20 minutes a day. It's wasted time. So I definitely think I sit in the middle. I see the value in it. I definitely feel the value in it when I do it myself, but I definitely don't prioritize it enough. So with all that said, what does the science say around time and frequency? So for example, I know with the app it's like a daily dose, which I really really like. Do you think that, yeah, does it support daily is better? Can we do 15 minutes, or is it better to do 5 minutes 3 times a day? Is 1 hour better? Is there anything to suggest one's better than the other?
Well, I think this really just goes back to like habit formation and using the science where of a habit and formation for our benefit, usually rather than against. At the moment, I think that a lot of us are like tied up in habits that aren't particularly useful for us. So how the happiness workout was really developed is the more you do it, the more you're being able to train and mold your brain and like positive utilizing positive neuroplasticity. And what was one of the biggest revelations for me was the fact that I found out my brain and all of our brains are like plastic, and so they can be completely moldable. So going back to the gym analogy, just like our muscles can be trained, they can be stretched, our brain has the exact capability to do that too. And just like we can't just go for one run a year and expect to be physically fit, that is the same with our brain as well. So I like to think that small and often is the best way to really form a habit than that. And it means that you don't, for example, necessarily need the apparatus anymore, because you're learning to swap your perspective. You're learning to do the happiness workout almost in the moment. But because we're so hardwired to always focus on the negative, I think that it is really useful to do something like the happiness workout every single morning, because it just reminds you. It reminds you to upgrade your mind. It reminds you to go, okay, how can I focus on what I'm grateful for over like what potentially I think is going wrong, which probably isn't? How can I take a moment to do some belly breaths to relax my nervous system? So I'm also a big fan of not setting goals that you can't achieve, because then you train your brain that it's okay to skip things. So start off on a routine that you know you can stick to. So if that's one happiness workout in the morning when you're having a cup of coffee, and I think that habit formation is easier to stick to when you add it to something else you're already doing. So if you know that your coffee time is when you're sitting down, that's when you attach a happiness workout, or you attach a meditation to it, or before, or whatever. And then if you can attach a reward with a new habit, it means that your brain is then more incentivized to want to do it the next day. So rewards and attaching it to already established habits in your day, I think are really useful tips to keep at something.
Yes, I couldn't agree more, Poppy. You are speaking my language. I say this to a lot of clients around habit formation. It's something that, you know, creating a new healthy habit and looking at the fact that habits are choices initially. You know, they become habits, but initially they are choices. And I guess as well, just being honest about the fact that they do require some discipline to start with, but then they become habits. And also wanted to loop back to what you said about the neuroplasticity piece, just for anyone who missed that, who kind of thought, huh, neuro what? I think it's really super powerful. When I learned about that and the concept that, you know, our brains, as you said, they're malleable, they're plastic, they can change, and you can change the thought patterns and the kind of the roots, you can rewire them. And so for anyone, yeah, who maybe missed it, could you just give us a quick breakdown of like, if something, you know, and sometimes people will say, well, that's just who I am, you know, I just can't, you know, they can't seem to change this mindset that they can't, you know, do a certain thing, or, oh, I'm just not good at that. Or, you know, how can you, yeah, just kind of give them a little bit of a framework of like what neuroplasticity is, and how through repetition, personally, I believe anyway, you can rewrite all of that stuff, you know, all the past stuff, what you were good at, what you weren't good at. And actually through repetition and daily practice of anything, essentially, you could master it.
Yeah. So one thing I would say is no baby comes into this world and says, don't look at me, I'm having a bad day, feeling anxious today. Just no baby says that. Babies look at you and they're full of light and life, and they're gurgling and usually smiling. And then we learn all sorts of things, and we are pretty much like empty canvases for the first kind of 7-8 years of our life. And we then learn from our environment, our belief systems, how the world works. And some of these beliefs are brilliant, and obviously, you know, we're learning how to live. But a lot of the beliefs that we end up inheriting can be very limiting, or, you know, and it can be as small as, you know, a teacher says, oh God, you're useless. And then we internalize that as, oh my God, I'm useless. And that then stays in our subconscious. So you can't delete your subconscious. That's a fact. But what has been proven by science is that our brain is always plastic. So we can always challenge our old beliefs and learn new ones. And neuroplasticity is basically a fancy word to say that your brain is plastic. So I was doing a talk the other day and someone put up their hand, and just as you were saying, they said, yeah, but I'm just an anxious person. Well, the science doesn't necessarily support the statement, I'm just an anxious person, because science shows that you have the ability to change anything. And that I found really liberating, because I also was that person that used to say, I'm just a stressed person, I'm just an anxious person, I'm just a worrier. And through repetition and practice, and our brain is always trying to find new paths, and our brain is also trying to be really efficient and find the easiest path to go down. So that's why sometimes it's really hard to create new beliefs, because our brain is like, oh no, it was easier just to go down the old belief of thinking I'm no good. Mm-hmm. And so that is why neuroplasticity to me was like liberation. I was like, yes, it means like, God, like someone has shown me that I don't need to be stuck with this. And that's what I just think is so brilliant about positive psychology and the research that's been done in the last 40 years to be a gateway to much more kind of mental freedom than I believe possible.
Absolutely. Like you said, it's a game changer. It's so liberating to learn it. And I had the same exact feeling. I felt like, hang on a minute. So as you said, when that person said to me, oh, Adrienne, you talk too much, or oh, Adrienne, you're the sporty one, or whatever these beliefs are that people put on you as a label, you kind of just accept and go, okay, cool. But then actually, yeah, it took me years to kind of challenge those and go, okay, if I talk too much, maybe that's because my passion is speaking, interviewing, using my voice, and that actually I can just use that as, you know, I can hone that skill. I can work that. And as you said, rewiring this understanding and this belief that something negative actually could be something really, really positive. Hence now being the host of this podcast. So yeah, I think it's brilliant when you know, really go back and unpick and start to understand that whatever the story, whatever the belief, whatever the skill set, you can change it. It's so empowering. We're the only species on the planet that can do that.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
So anyway, I'm going down this whole rabbit hole, but I want to bring it back a little bit to, for people listening to this show right now, this situation is crazy. Something that is coming up a lot in questions and a lot that I'm hearing is sleep. People talking about the fact maybe right now their sleep has changed and they're either not sleeping or they're having wild dreams or they're anxious about not being able to fall asleep. And I did do a podcast interview last year with a sleep scientist, Dr. Sophie Bostock. It was amazing. But I know there's also guides and about sleep on your app. So yeah, could you give us some takeaways for sleep and how, if our sleep is changing right now, what could we potentially do to help?
Yes, absolutely. So we have got an amazing sleep meditation teacher. He's actually a sleep hypnotist called Daniel Ryan on the Happy Not Perfect app. And he is phenomenal. And really, hypnotism, if anyone is wondering what that is, it's just a form of deep, deep relaxation. And usually when we're feeling very stressed and we can't go to sleep, our body is feeling as tense as our mind. And because through biofeedback, our obviously body and mind are in constant communication. So a tip to help you fall asleep is to focus on relaxing the body. Because if you relax your body then sends signals to your mind to say, it's safe. And I love going back to caveman times because it explains so much of our behavior. But when, for example, we wake up in the middle of the night, again, our brain thinks it's doing a good job. Because if you think about it, back in caveman times, if we sense danger, our brain would want to wake us up so we could defend ourselves. And so usually we get woken up if we haven't been able to process the what's gone on in the day. And we're waking up to kind of finish that processing or because otherwise that potentially could be dangerous for whatever reason we're worrying about. So another great trick to stop that worrying mind from waking you up is to journal before bed. Mm-hmm. And this then, when you journal, and that's why actually in the happiness workout, we have a journaling step. This activates your prefrontal cortex, that computer side. And by doing so, you start relaxing the emotional center. And then again, you're helping your brain go to sleep. So I like to think that sleep we almost have to get into a relationship with sleep. We've got to help our sleep. It's not just like, okay, get really angry. Like, why have I not fallen asleep in the first 30 seconds? Oh my God. It's actually like, okay, what can I do to help this process? Because it is, it's a constant back and forth between our sleeping self and ourself. And actually, I think I interviewed recently Dr. Neil Stanley, who's been a sleep researcher for the last 25 years. And he is just like, just says it how it is. And he said, you know, there is no reason why we should have trouble sleeping, because we're living in the best times ever. If you think about it, you know, the Western world usually have a nice bed. You know, there's usually central heating if we're cold. You know, we're not in huts, we're not in tents, but yet we still can't sleep. And often we are our own worst enemy because we're watching Netflix and stuck on Tiger King till 2 a.m. So it's being quite disciplined with ourselves too, saying, okay, I am going to give myself that hour without being stimulated by XYZ. And I always love the quote, the CEO of Netflix said, my greatest competitor is sleep. You know, he didn't say Amazon Prime or or YouTube. He was like, my biggest competitor is sleep. And that just shows you, if these huge corporate companies are seeing sleep as their competitor, it's in their interest to make you not sleep and for you to stay awake. And so they decrease commercial breaks, so your attention doesn't leave what they're showing you. So just, again, be mindful about, you know, your sleep is the most important thing for you, for your, like, your development, your repairing, to help you set you up for the next day. And the commercial world want to take that away from you. So fight against them and really prioritize your time before bed.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, because also, you know, right now I've listened to quite a lot of stuff recently around, you know, just optimizing our immunity and, you know, staying well in this situation. And it says that sleep is, you know, I think across the board, people are agreeing, whether it's doctors, you know, nutritionists, all agreeing that sleep is such a game changer for immunity, whether that's fighting a virus or just, you know, physical and mental health complaints. And actually, you know, if we are in a situation right now where we can create our sleep routine, go to bed at whatever time, get up at, you know, we really are in control of that. That is something that we can control. I think it's really important to prioritize. I know it's easy to watch another episode and stay up, and it seems so boring to be like, oh, Adrienne, I'm always talking. Honestly, Poppy, for people who listen to this show, I'm always talking about getting to bed early, getting up early, and kind of having this ninja type discipline in the evening to go to bed. But it's only because I've seen the impact that it has had in my own life. And then as soon as, you know, if it goes out the window for whatever reason and I am, you know, shifting and going to bed later, I feel the impact immeasurably, far more than anything else, far more than my training, my diet. Like, it's literally, if sleep is good, everything's in line, you know?
Yeah, totally.
So one more thing before I move on to talk to you about the power hour, and this is about routine. So at the moment, I'm definitely seeing two camps again. There's one that's like, we know routine is good, structure is good, wake up in the morning, have a structure, do this throughout the day, time block, productivity. Blah. And then, and also for parents, you know, I'm a parent and homeschooling right now. It's like, okay, let's have this structure for kids during the day. But there's also people saying, you know, scrap the routine. This is not a normal time. We are currently living through a global pandemic. Forget the routine and just go with the flow. Feel whatever you feel. If you don't want to get dressed, don't worry about it. And actually, you know, just when we get back to some kind of normal, then we can think about, you know, routine. But what would you say, Poppy? What do you think?
I think that I agree with both. And this is when I just don't, I really fiercely don't agree with, like, people not personalizing the advice they hear to them.
Yeah.
And, you know, for example, there's been some days, and I love routine, and it's the only thing that, like, gets me out of bed and, you know, helps me accomplish what I need to do that day and actually makes me feel good if I'm able to stick to my routine. But there's been, you know, some days where I'm like, oh God, you know, and you just can't get the energy and you try all the hacks. And then at that point, I'm in a great favor of just a compassionate, gentle handling with yourself. And if, you know, my friend called me yesterday and she said, I just can't concentrate today. And I said, just allow yourself to not concentrate today. And so I think there is just like a degree of flexibility we all need to allow ourselves, because, yeah, some days it's it's the routine is necessary and it's fantastic, as you said, so good for kids. But there's other days that we, our body may just say, okay, I need to rest, and this is a bit more intense than usual. And I think people underestimate how draining uncertainty is. Mm. And so just allowing yourself to have maybe one extra day where you like just take off the pressure and dial down the accelerator is maybe really healthy for you right now. And so that's what I would say.
Which I completely agree with you on the whole, you know, like personalizing the information. One thing I'm going to challenge you on though, Poppy, is what about when, you know, like some people will say to me, oh, that's cool, but if I just do that, then basically I'm going to listen to myself, I'm going to be compassionate, I'm going to eat ice cream, I'm going to watch TV, and I'm not getting dressed, and that's going to be the next day and the next day and the next day. Where do we kind of draw the line and step in and kind of go, you know what? This isn't going to be good for me long term, but right now this is how I feel and I can't break this loop, but I don't want to do this for 2 weeks or 2 months. Do you know what I mean? What would you think?
I think there's one thing being compassionate to yourself today, and there's another thing being compassionate to your future self. So you make the choice who you want to be more compassionate to. Like, does your present self need it more than your future self? Because you know your future self is going to appreciate your routine and you not doing that, but your present self may. So look, that's the trickiness of being human, is that it, I think there is a degree of restriction, right? And they always say you only can light a match if you have friction between the match and the lighter. And so I think that if you know, like, you're a Pringle and, you know, once you pop, you can't stop, which is really me when it comes to Pringles. I, like, demolish packs of them. But I think it's just, again, knowing what you're like. If you can give yourself a bit more time, maybe it's not the whole day, maybe it's the morning. But I think everything in moderation and moderation itself.
Yeah, I love that. I love that, especially the whole choose which one you want to be compassionate to, the future self or the self now. And I think what you're describing then is often, that's my relationship with running a lot of the time. You know, last year when I did 6 half marathons for that exact reason, because I know that on the mornings when I don't want to lace up, I don't want to particularly like run in the cold. If it's raining, I'd rather not. Then I'm like, you know what, that race is coming. And it's kind of like, I know I don't want to get to the start line and be undertrained. So I think, even though I talk about running analogies a lot, you know, I think that is a really important point, is to consider, like, yeah, right now, as you said, be compassionate, maybe just for the morning, but by midday it's like, okay, let's shake it off and let's kind of think about what you want to achieve later on and how you're going to get there. Because yeah, I think finding that balance is really important right now. Otherwise, you know, let's be honest, it'd be really cool to just take a month off and do nothing, but I think afterwards you might look back and go, oh, you know what, I wish I'd done it slightly differently.
Totally.
Cool. So let's talk about the power hour. This episode, Poppy, has been brilliant. It's going so quickly. I feel like I could just talk to you all day. Firstly, we haven't really spoken much about you, because it's been all around, you know, like advice for the listeners and around the different techniques and the tools, which is great. But I'd love to know, if you have a morning routine, what that looks like, what time you typically get up in the morning, and what's the first hour of your day like?
Okay, so my power hour morning. You know, it has changed a lot since Corona. So maybe I'll go through my power hour before Corona. Is that helpful? Or would you like Corona power hour?
No, let's go for, well, maybe pre and post, maybe pre and now.
And now. So usually my power hour would be, I always exercise in the morning. And that always starts, the first thing I do, even before I brush my teeth, is go for a 15-minute walk. So I literally get out of bed, put my trainers on, and go for a walk. And to me, that's my meditation. And it clears my head, it gets my body moving, and it sets me up for my entire day, and I can just consider everything. And either I'll do it in silent and think about my breathing, or I'll put on, and if I need an energy boost, I'll put on my favorite music. And it is incredible. In 15 minutes, I'm in a good mood, I can handle my day, I'm ready for anything. So first of all, is that first 15-minute walk is critical. I love coffee. I absolutely love it. It is, honestly, I wake up in the morning and I just think about my coffee. I love it so much. So usually within the first half an hour, I have made a Barocca. So before I have my coffee, I make a Barocca because that gives me the nutrients I feel that I need. And then I will make a coffee and I'm really particular with the almond milk I use.
Okay.
So either I'll make homemade almond milk or I'll buy Rude Health because I'm really aware of like the additives that are in some of the almond milks. And if I'm really treating myself, I'll go and buy like an almond milk latte, which is, again, it's like my birthday every day when I get one. I love it so much. And then I usually try and fit in, because I live quite close to my gym, I try and fit in a yoga class or some sort of class from that 7:30 to 8:30 mark. Mm-hmm. And then by 9, I'm washed, dressed, and usually sitting at my desk, and I work from home a lot. So I'm kind of, yeah, that first hour of my day, I fit in all my favorite things.
Yeah.
So my walk, my coffee, and some exercise.
I love that. I love that. I think the ritualistic thing around the coffee, and also just the joy that you describe it with. You know, you're like, I love it. I love it. It's like my birthday, just the coffee. And I think that's the thing, is we can take the small things for granted, you know, like, oh yeah, have my coffee, do this, do that. But if it is something that you love, if it is, I have that as well. My thing is nut butter. I love nut butter so much that it's the joy in my day. And honestly, when sometimes before my run, I have my nut butter and my banana, I'm honestly like, this is so good. And it's like, just because just it's so simple, but I think taking the joy in the simple things, surely, you know, those are the moments essentially that make up our entire lives. So yeah, I love that you do, you enjoy your coffee so much. And top tip there with the Barocca, I was like, guys, this woman is preaching, because the hydration before the caffeination is what you need in the morning. So this is good. I did miss, though, did you tell us what time? Do you have an alarm? What time does it go off?
So it changes. Usually, it kind of usually depends on if I've decided to do an exercise class. But usually I would say that it's either 7 o'clock or 7:30. I'm really not a 6 a.m.er. Sometimes I'll get up at 6:30 if I really want to do a 7 o'clock class, if I've got to like be somewhere at 9 and not be at my like home desk at 9. But it's somewhere between the 6:30, which is like not normal, and 7:30.
Cool. And so now, obviously, in this situation, so if you work from home sometimes, then perhaps this isn't as big an adaptation as it is for some people, you know, if they're used to commuting, getting into the office at a certain time. But for you, if you have that home set up, how has it changed now in this new environment?
So it hasn't changed too much, but I used to love the gym, and I love classes, and I love working out with people. I love that community feel of working out. And I really, really love yoga classes, and kind of doing breath work with lots of people around you. So I have slightly changed it. I will still get up at 7:30, and then usually I'll do a 25-minute yoga class, either using the Fit app, which I really like, F-I-I-T, and they have loads of classes on there, really easy to follow, or I've become quite obsessed with the different lives that are going around on social media.
Yeah.
And Cycle has a really good live, and they have loads of different classes, and so I'll either find or workshop. They have a lives that are very much focused on posture, which is something they haven't really focused on before, so that's quite fun. And then I make my coffee at home, and I usually don't have breakfast. I usually try and work, do 2 hours of work before I have breakfast.
Yeah, the morning fasting. And oh my gosh, Poppy, I am so happy to hear you say that you were using the Fit app. I was like, this, because when you're describing, you know, breath work, the 25-minute class, I was like, she must be using the app. So I'm really happy to hear that. Okay, before I ask you my closing question, Poppy, can you tell the lovely listeners where they can follow you online and where they can find Happy Not Perfect, the app and the podcast?
Yes. So you can find me on social media. It's just at Poppy Jamie, PoppyJamie. You can find the Not Perfect podcast on all podcasting platforms. And you can find Happy Not Perfect on the App Store or Android. And you can try it out for free. So give it a go and hopefully it'll help your morning routine to focus on the positives and let go of the things that are potentially stressing you out.
Yes, and I definitely can't recommend that you give it a go enough. I know that a lot of listeners of this show are very active people, runners, people that work out. It's just as important for us to focus on working out our minds, guys, especially in this time. So honestly, if you do nothing else today, after this episode, head over to the App Store, download it, and give it a go. Okay, so my closing question for you, Poppy, is if you had one extra hour of time, what would you use that extra hour every single day to do?
You know what? It would actually be to call and speak to more friends. And I think that our life is always made better by our friends. So if I had an extra hour, I'd dedicate it to them.
Yes, that's lovely. I think I've been doing that a lot more recently. And I hope that when we go back to the busyness of life and usual routines, I'm going to try to continue that, especially my family quiz, which I've been loving on Zoom. Me and my brother and sister are doing these insane
so
quizzes.
Fun.
And my brother was the quiz host. It was very, I mean, he's amazing and he's an entertainer anyway. He's usually in a West End show, but he's not at work right now. So we're getting to enjoy him entertaining us instead. So
oh,
yeah,
so
I'd love
nice.
To keep that going. Well, thank you so much, Poppy. It's been great to connect. And thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in and listening to the Power Hour podcast. I really hope that you are staying well, that you're staying home, that your friends and your family are well. If you enjoyed this episode or you feel that somebody you know would benefit from it, then please do share it. You can rate and review us on iTunes. You can get in touch on social media, all that good stuff. Have a great week and stay safe. See ya.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.